Right, so before we start today's sermon, let's chant Namaskara three times. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So someone has asked a question that how do we understand energy without entitifying it? Right? Did you all get the question? How do we understand the energy without entitifying it? So now this is an interesting question. So we have to understand something, ladies and gentlemen, that the samsara means what? The process which exists because of ignorance, right? Samsara. When we normally think about the world, right? We are always biased, right? When we think about the world. Actually, even though, the most fundamental view which is there in any mind, the very reason why mind and body is there, right? The physical matter is there and the mind is there. The reason for that is because there is an ignorance, right? And if we were, now we know from our teachers, right? We have learned from them that the ignorance is what? The thinking that this world is Nitya Sukha Atta, right? So that is what we consider ignorance. Now the thing is, ladies and gentlemen, what we need to understand is that we are biased in the way we think about everything. If we don't know Buddha Dhamma, right, then normally the way we think about anything, we are always biased in our thinking. So in what way we are biased? So we are always biased by ignorance, really, right? Because that is the most fundamental view that we have, right? So whenever we think about something, so unless, you know, we have achieved the fruition of sotapanna, right, or stream entry, unless we have become a sotapanna, right, we don't have access to the other view, right, which is also possible, right? So Nitya Sukha Atta is a one view, right, but that is not the only way in which mind can arise, right? The mind can arise with the Anicca Dukkha and Anatta view as well, right? And when the mind is created with the Nitya Sukha and Atta view, right, then there are certain type of experiences, right? And when mind is created with Anicca Dukkha and Anatta view, there are certain type of experiences. So we can, when we understand Anicca Dukkha and Anatta, we can observe the difference between the experiences which are result of these two different type of views, right? So now see, when Buddha was there, right, conventionally the human being to whom we call Buddha, when he was alive and when he was living, even in his time, there were so many ascetics and philosophers, right? And they all had all sorts of views, and not just them, right? Even in other societies, right, they also had all sorts of views. So there were some philosophers who believed that everything is created out of water. There were some philosophers who were claiming that everything is just consciousness, right? This universe is all just consciousness. So there were philosophers with such view, right? Even in the modern world, right, we have all sorts of philosophers who have different type of thinking. There are philosophers who think that universe is made up of mathematics, right, or universe is a mathematical structure. There are philosophers who think like that. Then there are some philosophers who think that universe is just information, right? It is just aggregation of information. Everything is information. This is information. This is information. This is information. So there are philosophers who think like that, that everything is a information, right? Now the thing is, see, This Nitya Sukha Atta, right? What does it mean? In a way, Nitya Sukha and Atta thinking, it means that we believe that things exist, right? That is what we believe. And things exist as in what way? Things were existing in the past and they are existing now and they would be existing in the future as well, right? So that is the entity based or this ignorance based thinking, Nitya Sukha and Atta. Things were there in the past, they are here, right? And they will be there. The same thing which is here, which was there in the past, will be there in the future as well, right? Because it is fixed, right? So now when we believe in such a world, right, if we believe that that is how the world is, now obviously we need to have some sort of view about how the world is then, right? Because if the world exists and it has always existed, and if it has existed in some way, then now we need to know how things are, right? Fundamentally, what is the nature of reality? We want to know that, right? So now, what we need to understand is that, see, all these philosophers, right, I have just quoted few views, right, just few philosophers, but there have been so many philosophers and they have all presented their own theories about how everything is or how the world is. Now, there is a question about how to understand energy without entitifying it, right? So, we need to understand that Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta, it means that things are not supposed to be in any way, right? So we were discussing this example of shape of water, right? So you know that even though, I mean, if I were to ask you a question, what is the shape of water? Then what would you tell me? You would tell me that water is shapeless. That is what you would tell me. But now tell me one thing. If I ask you, where did you observe shapeless water? Then what would you tell me? Have you ever observed shapeless water? Even though what we say is that water is shapeless, can you actually observe shapeless water anyway in this universe? No, right? Wherever you observe water, water is always going to have shape. But when we observe that shape in that particular instance, can we generalize that this is the shape of water? We can't generalize, right? So, we know that even though we always see water in some shape, that shape is not the shape of water, right? In absolute sense, water is in that arrangement, in that moment, but that's it. It does not mean that water has that shape, right? And of course, the another extreme, that water is shapeless. So, will you ever, do you think you will ever observe water in shapeless form anywhere? Wherever you observe water, it will be in some way, right? Even if you go to empty space, even then water will be scattered or whatever. But even that is some shape. Perhaps we don't have a name for that shape, but it will be in some shape, right? So, water neither has absolute shape, neither we can say water is shapeless, right? Both of those are extreme views. So, the important thing to understand here is that the shape of water that we observe in any given instance, it's always conditioned, right, by some sort of forces. It's not unconditioned, right? So, in the same way, when we talk about the world, right, now, how do we understand the world? When we try to understand the world, right, what do we try to do in order to understand the world? We use our mind in order to understand the world, right? How else do we understand the world without using your mind? It is by using your mind that you try to understand world. Now, of course, in the mind, how does the mind work? The mind has all sorts of ideas and concepts, right? Mind works with the ideas and concepts. So, now, of course, in that way, when we think in that way, right, we can think about the reality on so many different levels, right? You know, if I were to talk about any material object here, right? For example, if I were to take this marker pen, then now, you know, I can, conventionally, the most simplest way I can say this is just a pen, right? Then if we go deeper, then perhaps now I can talk about the material of this pen, and then I can tell you this is plastic, right? Then if you go even deeper, then I can tell you this is specifically, you know, chain of molecule, that is what we call polymers. And then if we go even deeper, then we can say the chain is made up of molecules. Then I can say it is atoms, right? Molecules are made up of atoms, and atoms are made up of electrons, and so on and so forth. So we can talk about the reality on multiple levels, right? Now, what we need to understand is that reality, it's not supposed to be in any way. So whenever we observe something, right, the only thing that we need to really understand, so if you are to think about the universe in two ways, right, if you are to divide everything into the mind and matter, right, then the only thing which really happens in both the mind and matter is, Buddha did use this word, hetum paticca sambhutam, right? Hetum means the causes, paticca is the configuration or structure of the causes, and sambhuta. So when there is a hetum and paticca, that means when there is a configuration of causes, right, then there is a particular type of effect which is result of the arrangement of those causes, but that effect is not something that exists. It is not supposed to be in that way. So we did talk about this using some examples previously. So if you were to think about this whiteboard, right, what is the color of this whiteboard? So now forget about the fact that what you see are just colors, because you have all learned that as well, right? But if we, so as if we were to be just very naive in the way we think, right, and if you just think about these things from very normal perspective, then what would you normally say? This is whiteboard, and the color of this is what? White. But now if you were to think, if we were to observe this in a context, right, more broader context, then you know that this whiteboard is there in this room, and this room is full of these white lights, right? So it's only in the white light you see what? A whiteboard. What if we change these lights to the red lights? Then what would you observe? Then you would observe the red, red board. Now, how do I say red whiteboard? Not red whiteboard, red board, right? And now, of course, so can you, okay, let me put it in this way. So even when we put this lights, if we change this lights into the red lights, then are you sure that you will observe this as red board? I'm not asking question whether every single one of you will see this as same red or not. That is a different thing. I'm asking, will you see red board for yourself? Is that necessarily true? Just because there are red lights here, your eyes are working, okay? So you are leaving and your eyes are working. All those things are just normal. So, you know, even in that case, now, what if I give you some sort of colored glasses? So there is a red light here. And let's say I give you green glasses. So without green glasses, you would see this as red board. But if I were to give you green glasses, now what would you see? Now, is it brown, purple, violet, brown? Sure. So if I were to give you the green glasses, then this supposedly red board, you would see as what? As brown, right? So what is real in here? What color is real in here? Tell me. What can we say? So see, this is the thing about the reality, right? There is nothing which is absolute, really, right? Whatever we observe, it's always, whatever we observe, it depends on lots of causes, right? It only makes sense in that context. So, when you observe water in some shape, that shape is only there in that particular instance, right? It's not really something existing. So, now, when we understand this more deeper and deeper, then we will understand that the only thing which can happen in this world is what? Manifestation, right? So, whenever you observe creation, right? Whenever you observe creation, you have to understand creation can never result into the entity. The process of creation, right? Creation means, let's say, coming together of causes. You can never bring together causes in order to create entity. Think about why. What did I say? We can never bring together causes in order to create an entity. Right? Entity means one thing which means something that has no parts or which will never be, it cannot be broken down into more components, right? So, what is the reason? See, the very fact that you had to bring together causes, that means the causes did not want to come together by themselves, right? You had to bring them together. Now the fact is, if you had to bring them together, then that means who did apply the force on the causes for them to come together? We did apply the force, right? So what happens when that force is not there? So if the causes, they don't want to stay together, and they are only together in any given instance because there is a force which keeps them together, and that force does not come from those causes themselves, then how can you create something? So, whenever the causes come together, we have to understand they can never create entity. Now the thing is, even though what happens is the causes come together, right? Whenever you observe something, have you ever observed something which has always existed? So perhaps you have not observed the creation of everything in this universe, right? But you know that in conventional way, what we say was created at some point in time, right? Everything was created at some point in time. Then that means it happened and we could have observed, if we were there, we could have observed it coming together. Now, even though what happens in this universe is what? Hetum paticha, that means what? Causes coming together, right? That is what happens. Then, now, because there is an ignorance in mind, even though, see, what did the Buddha tell us in the second noble truth? Tanha samudaya or trushna samudaya, dukkha samudaya. That is what Buddha did tell us in the second noble truth. When there is a, samudaya means hetum paticha, right? Samudaya, that word means hetum paticha. So when trushna samudaya happens, then what happens? Dukkha samudaya, right? So even though trushna samudaya, dukkha samudaya, that is what happens because there is a ignorance in the mind, right? So if we talk about the process of ignorance, the defilement process, right? It starts with the ignorance, and then we know when there is a ignorance, then there is what? Expectation or attachment, right? So more formally we can say attachment, right? So what is attachment? Attachment is the expectation, right, of world to be nitya sukha atta. When you think that something is there, then now you obviously expect it to be there. So in some of the previous sermons we did discuss this example of image in the mirror, right? If some of you do remember. So imagine that you had ignorance about how the mirror works. So if you had ignorance about how the mirror works, and now imagine that you had this view that even though you are not in front of mirror, so imagine this is a mirror, this TV, imagine it is a mirror, right? And you have this view that even when you are not in front of the mirror, the image that you see when you are in front of mirror, that image is always there, even though you are not in front of mirror. Imagine that you are someone who thinks like that. Now, what happens is, you know it's not true, right? When you go in front of mirror, the very reason why there is a image in the mirror is because you are in front of that and there is a light and everything else is there. That is why you see image. image is not supposed to be there, right? But imagine that you are someone who had a view that image is supposed to be there. So if that is the thinking that you have, even though it's wrong, right? You know, mind can have both right views and wrong views. And as long as the mind does not know what is the truth, mind can happily just run with the wrong views. There is no problem as long as there is no resistance, or as long as there are no other better views or more correct views. So now, what would happen is, even when you are not in front of mirror, imagine that you are sitting somewhere in some other room, right? And suddenly you get a thought, let me go and see the image which is there in the mirror, right? So now you go and you go in front of mirror, and when you are standing in front of mirror, you see image. And now every time you see image, how do you interpret that image? Even before you did go in front of mirror, that image was there. That is what you would think. And the thing is, how would you get out of this wrong view? Tell me. Unless someone tells you, or unless you really, really think hard about it, you would just not be able to come out of this view every time, because it's not like image is not lying to you, right? Is image lying to you? Is it the image which is telling you, even before you came in front of mirror, I was here? It's not the image which has told us such a story, right? It is the our wrong view, and we have. So actually, when we did go in front of the mirror, we interpret what we see according to the views that we already have, right? So why did I say all these things? Because we are talking about the ignorance, right? Ignorance means what? This ignorance basically means that there is a belief that world is Nitya Sukha Atta. So when there is such a belief, then just like this man who did go in front of the mirror with that expectation of image is always there, right? Just like that, as long as there is a ignorance, and ignorance is powerful, right? It's more powerful than the wisdom in our mind. Then what happens is, whenever mind is created with this expectation. What expectation? With this view, basically. This is the most fundamental view, right? So when the mind is created, then mind is created with this view that what? World is Nitya Sukha Atta. So if world is in fact Nitya Sukha Atta, then you would be able to see it, right? Nothing wrong to expect. If the world is really Nitya Sukha Atta, then you would be able to see Nitya Sukha Atta. There is nothing wrong with that. So this attachment is that expectation to experience or observe Nitya Sukha Atta, right? So ignorance, attachment, and then when you expect something, there is going to be a vexation. When there is an expectation, there is vexation. And when there is a vexation and it becomes unbearable, then eventually the abhisankhara is what we consider a safety mechanism of the mind, right? So mind gets rid of its own vexation using, it basically creates some sort of hallucination in order to get rid of so much vexation that it has. So that is, those hallucinations are what? Jati and jati dhamma. Right? And jati and jati dhamma, what do jati and jati dhamma mean? Jati and jati dhamma basically means this feeling that something has always been there. So what do you feel about yourself? You have always been there. You were there, you are here, and you will be there in the future as well. That is how you think. And other things which are there, you feel somehow they were also there. So now the thing is, of course, we don't think everything was always there. So you might tell me that, Swami Anse, we know that perhaps this paper, it was created at some time. But what normal person feels is that even though this paper was created at some point in time, ever since that point in time, this paper has always been there, right? What you observe right now, that thing has always been there since that time. That is how they believe. That is why you have manufacturing dates on the various products. When you buy something, so if you buy a pack of biscuits, right, then now there will be a manufacturing date on that pack of biscuits, that it was manufactured, let's say, last month. So what we normally understand when we read manufacturing date is, we feel that these biscuits which are in our hands right now, they were created last month. So, see, this is the funny thing. when you are working on some documents, imagine that you are working on some documents in your computer, and let's say you are doing some homework or you are working on some business document or something, and let's say you did save the document yesterday, and then this morning you came to the monastery now, and now in the evening perhaps when you go back, now again you will continue your work. So when you open the document, what will that document say? When was it created? It was created last evening. So what you are observing in this moment, it says that it has been there since last evening, right? So, you know, even when you go and read the properties, right, of the documents, you know, with the computer files, we can see the properties of the files. So if you see the properties, then properties will also talk about some time, right, when those documents were created. So you know that date itself, right, it comes from what? Some sort of data in the hard disk. If that data was different in that moment, then it would tell you some other date, not the date that you see. So when was document really created? There is no answer to that question. Even though somehow we feel there is an answer to that question, there is no correct answer to that question. Like, what I mean by correct is absolute answer. So now why am I talking about the absolutes? Because as we did start this sermon, all the philosophers, they have this need to believe into something. So when Buddha talks about the Paticca Samuppada, right? In Paticca Samuppada, now this is a very simplified version of the dependent origination cycle. But if you were to take the one that Buddha did talk about in scriptures, then in that dependent origination cycle, after this attachment step, there is something called Upadana. Right. So this Upadana in a way, it means holding on to something really. So there are fundamentally four types of Upadana, and one of this Upadana is what? Drushti Upadana. Right. So Drushti Upadana means what? Holding on to some sort of views. That those views are, so it's not just the correct views that we hold on to. We hold on to both the correct views and wrong views. It's not just the correct views. See, now, right now, imagine that I didn't know one of you in the audience, right? And I knew what is your name, right? So, or at least you think that I know what is your name. And now imagine that now I address you with some different name. So why do you think that I have addressed you with some wrong name? Because you have idea about the correct name, right? You hold on to that view. What is your correct name, right? So we hold on to the truth, and we also hold on to the false ideas as well, really. So perhaps now when you understand anicca, dukkha and anatta more and more, right, as you all practice, perhaps now if someone were to tell you something, and that something were to imply that they are talking about something from the nitya, sukha and atta point of view, then now what will you perhaps think in your own mind? That they are wrong, right? But you are correct. That is what you would feel. So even in that case, see, this is all holding on to some sort of views, really. This idea of correct and incorrect, it always comes from holding on to some sort of views. So if you think, you know, right now you might think that I'm now jumping to many different facts, but the thing is, we need to consider all these facts, then we would be able to understand what's the problem here, what's going on. So holding on to views means what? See, if there was a hungry person, imagine that there is a hungry person, and that hungry person is holding on to something very tightly. You want to take something, so imagine he's holding on to something very tightly, right? And you try to get that thing from him, but he's not letting go. So you know one fact about him, that he's very hungry, right? So then if he's holding on to something tightly, so physically hungry, I mean, so if he's holding on to something tightly, then what can you infer from that situation? That what he's holding on to must be what? Food, right? Because he is hungry, he is holding on to what thing tightly? Food, right? He will hold on to food very tightly. So in the same way, when there is a ignorance in mind, and when there is attachment and there is vexation, then if the mind holds on to something tightly, then now you have to know what will it hold on to tightly. It will hold on to, so now when it, of course, mind is not hungry about the physical food, right? The mind which is ignorant is hungry about what? This vexation, right? This vexation. Why is this vexation there? Because the mind wants what? Nitya sukha atta. So if the mind holds on to something tightly, right, it is not willing to let go something, then what does it mean? That thing that it is holding on to tightly must be what? According to that mind, it must be what? Nitya sukha atta, right? Even a very hungry person, even he can hold on to a packet which is not really food, but he thinks it is food. Do you understand? So this upadana, there are four types of upadana. So one of this upadana is drushti upadana. Normally, non-arhants, right, the people who are not arhants, who are not fully enlightened, they cannot live without believing into something. They have this strong necessity, or let's say need, to believe into something. They cannot live without believing into something. They have to believe into something, some sort of view, right? So now this is where our early sermon point comes now. So we did start this sermon with what? There were so many philosophers, and they all had so many different views. Some were like everything is energy and information and mathematical structure, and some are like entropy, and all sorts of views are there about this universe, how this universe works, right? And that is because there is a vexation in mind to believe into something, right? So, and of course, believing means what? What does the believing means? When view means what? View means some sort of idea about something, right? There is something, and this is how that something is. That is what jati and jati dhamma means in a way, right? That there is a something, and that something is in some way. So like when we are discussing about this example of water, so this need to believe, it's like, you know, you cannot live without, you know, creating some sort of idea about the water. You need to have some idea about the water. Is water shapeless, or does water have a shape? Okay, if the water has shape, then what is the correct shape of water? That is what the mind needs, right? The vex mind, not all minds, the vex mind, right? And vexation, the most fundamental vexation. So when we think about the life, even though now when you are living your life, and if you are not fully enlightened, then perhaps you have likings and dislikings, and you have wantings and you have desires. Now you might think that the thing that you think you want is what you really want. That is what you might think, but it is not so really. It is not the chocolates or ice creams or relationships or some material things. These are not the things that you really want, even though that is what you feel. The most fundamental desire or wanting in the mind is this attachment, right? This attachment means what? Expecting the world to be nitya sukha atta. So that is the most fundamental expectation or desire. So you, even though you have so many other desires, underlying all those desires, this is the fundamental desire, this attachment, right? This expectation of world to be nitya sukha atta. So let's say you want to, you have a liking for some food, let's say. So even behind that liking, that is the surface level desire that you like to eat something particular. But underlying that particular liking or desire, there are so many other ideas, right? Do you feel that that food is supposed to have a taste, a particular taste, always? So like we did talk about this whiteboard. Is there a color here? Can you say what color is this board? There is no objective answer to that question. But the thing is, somehow we believe in objective answers, right? And when we think that there is a, we have received some sort of objective answer, then we hold on to that. So even behind that idea, I mean, your liking for some food, it's not good or bad thing. You just need to understand what is really happening in your mind, right? And the, what is happening under the hood when you have that desire, let's say you like some food. So you have this expectation. It's not just one thing. There are so many different, when we talk about this ignorance. So there are so many angles to this ignorance. It's not just one angle. So from your contemplation, if you understand the ignorance from one angle, that does not mean you will get fully enlightened. There are so many different angles and you have to understand this ignorance from all those angles. And when your understanding is finished, right, and it's like complete, only then you will be fully enlightened. So even behind this food, one of the expectations that you could have is that the food is always supposed to be, supposed to taste in some particular way. But just like the color of this pot always depends on the context, the board itself does not have any color. It's always in a broader context that what you see happens, right? In the same way, even the taste, you know, there are, so someone had told me that there is some sort of flower, and when you eat that flower, and after eating that flower, when you eat sour food, then they told me that the sour food will taste like they are sweet food. So then the thing that you would normally consider to be sour, is it really sour or is it supposed to be sweet? What is the absolute taste there? What is the answer to that question? We can think about everything in the same way. Nothing is supposed to be in some particular way. Supposed to be, right? This idea of supposed to be, because supposed to be means even in the past it was in this way and even now it is in this way. And it is not that it is result of causes in that moment. It is supposed to be in that way. There is something, I mean the person or thing or whatever, some entity, right? Living entity or non living entity or inert entity, those entities, they are supposed to be in some way, right? That idea that comes from here, really. So now what is the ignorance? Ignorance means that something exists always in some way. It doesn't matter what way, but something exists, some entity, and how does it exist? It exists in some way, and it would be nice if we can know how it exists. So now, when you understand that there are no absolutes, there is nothing that we can say definitely it is in this way, certainly it is always in this way, it is always in this way, it is supposed to be in this way. If you understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, you know those ideas, they make no sense, right? Then now, can someone say that this is how things are? If no one can say how things are or how things are supposed to be, so we can have some conventional ideas, but those are just conventions really. Those ideas are not absolute. So you can tell me that water has the shape of this water ball right now, the one which is there on this table, but that's not absolute, right? That's not absolute. It's not objective truth. It's just in that context, the water is in that way, in that structure, in that situation. So this question, how to understand energy without entitifying it? So this entitification, we need to understand. So actually, even when we think about the energy, what does the energy mean? What do you mean by energy really? So it's again like shape of water, right? I mean, when you believe into some sort of absolute, that is when you want to take some sort of view or stance on how the water is, right? So see, reality, see, this is the thing. Now, in Buddha's time, so when we think about this ascetics, so when Buddha did get enlightened, and you know that he was thinking, to whom I should go and teach this Dhamma first. And then you know that as the story goes that there were five ascetics who used to do five ascetics who used to do all these ascetic practices with the Bodhisattva earlier in those previous 6 years. And then actually Bodhisattva first had a thought that let me go and teach this Dhamma to my former teachers who did teach me this concentration meditation, right? Those who helped me attain this dhyanas that I have. So Alara, Kalama and Udaka, Ramaputta, those were I think the names. So these teachers, he wanted to go and teach them, but then he got to know that they have passed away. He can't go and help them. And then he did go to the group of five ascetics. He did thought that perhaps they will be able to understand this Dhamma easily because they have been trying so hard. They are so ready to get this Dhamma. I just need to go and give them and then that's it. So he did, of course, eventually goes to them. And now, of course, because this particular group of ascetics, right, they were doing what? They were doing all sorts of ascetic practices. Right, mortification, self-mortification. They were standing on one leg and worshipping the fire and meditating in the open sun under the, you know, in the afternoon. And they were doing all sorts of things like that, thinking that that is the way to enlightenment. So we don't need to laugh on them. I mean, we can have a lot of appreciation for such people that they are putting so much effort not to do some wrong thing, but to get enlightened. Right. So anyways, that's the side point. But what were they doing? They were doing this ascetic practices. So when Buddha goes to them, what is the sermon that he preaches to them? He says that the very first thing, if you read Dhammacakka Pravatana Sutta, right, which is considered the first discourse of Buddha. So what does the Buddha tell them? The very first thing he tells that venerable ascetics, these are two extremes and you should not indulge in those, these two extremes. And what were those two extremes that he did talk about? So one was this Kama Sukhali Kanu Yoga, right? That was indulgence in sensuality, right? Extreme indulgence in sensuality. And then there was the other extreme, which was this asceticism, right? Self-mortification practices. So he did say what? That you should not do this either, because both of these extremes, they will not lead you to the enlightenment. Now, he talked about those two extremes because what were they doing? They were doing these ascetic practices. Now, in Buddha's time, no one else apart from Buddha or Buddha's disciples, none of them outside the Buddha's dispensation had this view of anicca, dukkha and anatta. Right. So you might read many things, you might feel that this is not something exclusive to Buddhist philosophy, there are other religions, they also talk about something similar. Then what is the special thing in Buddha Dhamma? So the special thing in Buddha Dhamma is four noble truths and anicca, dukkha, anatta. Those are, or dependent origination also, those are three special things in Buddha Dhamma. So this anicca, dukkha and anatta, no one outside Buddha's dispensation had this view of anicca, dukkha and anatta. So now, if you don't understand the cause and effect, and if you don't understand what the effect or manifestation means, if you don't understand hetum paticca sambhutam, then the only way you think about this reality is how? You always think about this reality in terms of two extremes. And what are those two extremes? So, one time Buddha did go to this ascetic. And his name was, as I can recall, his name was Kacchayana, as I can recall, right? So, this ascetic or this Brahmin, right, all these other philosophers and everyone, how did they always think? So they always think, they did always think in terms of these two extremes, not those sensuality and asceticism. They always did think in those, these two extremes of there is something and there is nothing. Those were the two extremes that they did always think in terms of. Really, they always, whatever they thought of, they always thought in terms of those two extremes. There is something or there is nothing. There is existence, there is non-existence. So that is the only way they did think and they did understand the reality. There is something and there is nothing. But how do you understand something which is, which you cannot say to be existing or non-existing? How do you understand that? So effect is something like that. It is not existing and it is not non-existing either. So how is it? So the thing is, see, this is why when Buddha when we talk about anicca dukkha and anatta, this anicca dukkha and anatta, it is an intuitive knowledge, really. No one can say that this is how, this is what anicca dukkha and anatta is. No one can say such a thing. Because anicca dukkha and anatta is an intuitive knowledge. It is something. So it's like, I can point you towards that. Not just me, anyone who has learned this philosophy and they have practiced it, they can point you towards the reality, but they cannot give you reality. The reality is something that you see in your mind with your practice. And when you learn how to see reality in your mind, right, when from Buddha or from Buddha's disciples, you learn this, you get this pointer about how to create or understand reality in your mind, and as it happens in your mind, now you can start to slowly live with that reality. So this term Tathagata, when you talk about this term Tathagata, so one of the meaning of this word Tathagata, right, is that someone who always can stay with this fact, Tatha. What Tatha? Tatha. What fact? This fact of Pachuppanna, or the fact that reality is anicca, dukkha and anatta. Someone who can always live with this fact of anicca, dukkha and anatta, that is whom we call Tathagata. Someone who is always living with this fact of anicca, dukkha, anatta. So when you understand, when we point you towards the reality that this is how you should think, and when the reality, the truth manifests in your mind, right? Truth is not something that comes from someone to you. The truth is something that, truth is also an effect in your mind. Right, this knowledge, this intuitive knowledge of anicca, dukkha and anatta, that is also manifestation in your mind. So when the truth manifests in your mind, then you can slowly start to live with that truth constantly. And when a day comes that even without effort you are always living with that truth, that is the day that you can be a Tathagata. Right? So that is what we call arhanduhans, or fully enlightened disciples of Buddha, the arhans, right, the perfected ones. So now, just to go through this one more time, how to understand energy without entitifying. So this is the process of entitifying, right? When we understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, it's not like we will strive to not entitify things. Entitification will not happen in our mind. When our mind always starts with the truth, right? Entitification would not happen in our mind. So we don't need to do anything to stop entitification. See, this is the thing, right? Think about yourself. If you try to do something, as in the self trying to do something, to create something, whenever you try to do that, you need to understand, do you think Arhantuhansa is an entity? Do you think fully enlightened person is some sort of entity? Even if he is entity, then how can you bring together causes and create an entity? So then, if it is not entity, then how can you go and get it? Is enlightenment somewhere, and can you go and get enlightenment? It's not entity that you can go and get somewhere, right? So someone has asked question, how is it possible to reduce mental vexation when in physical pain? So, good question. Did everyone get the question? How do we not get mental vexation even though there is a physical pain? So, ladies and gentlemen, the simple thing that we need to understand. So, let me tell you one interesting fact. We did just understand ignorance leads to attachment, and attachment leads to vexation, and then there is Abhisankara, safety mechanism, then it results into Jati and Jati Dhamma. And then, you know, even with the Jati and Jati Dhamma, once the Jati and Jati Dhamma happens, then there are 11 great fires, right? So I'll put that on the board. So this GF is great fires, okay? So these are also vexation, the stress and anxiety and fear and grief and despair, all these emotions are also vexatious emotions, right? Uncomfortable emotions. So there are emotions or these feelings which happens after jati and jati dhamma, and then there is a more fundamental vexation which is direct result of what? Attachment. So there are, we need to distinguish between these two vexations. These are two very different what? Vexations. These are not same vexation. And this vexation which comes after attachment, that vexation is more fundamental vexation. So now the interesting thing here in this process is this. The most fundamental vexation is this. And when the mind does something in order to get rid of this vexation, and that something does not involve Buddha Dhamma, so it's not like you are trying to develop wisdom, but you do anything else in order to get rid of this fundamental vexation. So what are you going to do? So you are going to do something. So that something means what can you do? You can think, or you can speak, or you can do something with your body. Those are the three things that you can do. And those three things, what do we call them? Sankhara. Right? And when you do abhisankhara, how does the sankhara become abhisankhara? So when you have an intention, when you have a defiled intention, so we can think about in one way, when you have a defiled intention, right, the intention which is not free from raga, dvesha and moha, when the mind does something with that intention, then that is when this abhisankhara happens. So if you do, so this vexation is result of what? This expectation, nitya sukha atta, right? And you know, when there is this ignorance, then the ignorance itself means moha. And when there is a moha, then raga and dvesha also there, right? So whenever you are vexed basically, and then you try to do something about that vexation in order to get rid of that, with this defiled intention, with the raga, dvesha and moha, then what will happen? Jati and Jati Dhamma will happen. And when Jati and Jati Dhamma happens, and it's not like the end of the game, then now even because of this Jati and Jati Dhamma, thus you will suffer. And that suffering will not stop. It's funny really. I mean this. So, when we talk about the our sense of security, the psychological security, So, in a way, what we can tell about ourselves is we are all trying to be secure, right? In a way, we are trying to be psychologically secure, right? Because we always, about something, we all feel insecure about something. We feel worried and concerned and afraid about something always, right? Is there anyone apart from arhants or let's say enlightened people who are not worried about something? Everyone else, right? The non-arhants, the whole category, everyone is worried about something. Even if someone becomes anagami, even then they are worried about something. They are not fully free. Even anagami, can you imagine? So everyone, they are trying to find this psychological security, right? And how do you become secure? So usually what people do is they try to find some sort of source of psychological security, right? And what could be those source of security? So some people, they find security in the wealth. So they have a lot of money. So they feel secure because they have a lot of money. So then their security is dependent on what? Their wealth, right? So that's what I mean, right? People's security, it's always dependent on something. It could be dependent on the health. It could be dependent on their status. It could be dependent on something, right? Non-arhans, they are always going to have insecurity, and they will always try to get rid of that insecurity unless they have Buddha Dhamma, right? They will not be able to remove this. See, this insecurity, in a way, you can say that insecurity is here. The fundamental psychological insecurity that we all feel, right? That we can say it is this vexation, really. Because we feel vexation and because we feel pain, where does that fundamental, most fundamental pain comes from? That most fundamental pain comes from where? From this ignorance. And as long as this ignorance is there, we feel vexation. And as long as there is a vexation, and we don't understand that vexation itself is an effect, then what do we try to do? We try to do something about vexation. Right? And as long as we try to do something about vexation, actually when we feel insecurity, we always try to find some way to be superior. right? I mean, the ego, it always finds some way to be superior when there is a vexation, right? When you feel you are small, when you feel you are nobody, or when you feel inferiority complex, then you always try to do something in order to come out of that. Right. So perhaps, you know, so people, I don't need to go into examples. There are billion examples, right? People, they try to do billion things in order to do what? To become somebody, right? Because they cannot be at peace with the how things are, because, and it's purely their own view. So anyway, so when there is this insecurity, then what does the mind try to do? Mind tries to get rid of that insecurity by doing something. And when it tries to get rid of that insecurity by doing something, then what happens? The jati and jati dhamma. But now the funny thing is this. This jati and jati dhamma, it is just a hallucination. It's not real. So if it is not real, if it's not real, if it's not always there, right? If it is effect, but you don't understand it is effect, then now what would happen? If your security depends on that, then now you always have to maintain, right? And this maintenance, of course, always only going to add to more vexation, right? So now, why did I talk about this when the question was, how to reduce mental vexation because of the physical pain? So why did I talk about all these things? The problem is this. When there is a physical pain, then this physical pain, if we don't understand, it is just the effect. It is just the sambhuta. It is just the manifestation. It is not nitya sukha atta, but that pain is just anicca dukkha anatta. When we don't understand that simple fact that this physical pain is just a effect, then even that physical pain, whether we like or not, if the mind is created with the ignorance, then that pain will be interpreted how? As something that is existing thing. So now think about it. So imagine that you had some physical illness or suffering right now, as you are in this sermon, and it did not start just now. Conventionally, let's say it did start few weeks ago or few days ago or even yesterday. So now if I ask you, since how long you have this mental pain, or let's say physical pain that you are feeling right now, how long you did have it, then what would you tell me normally? You would tell me that, we had this pain since yesterday or since few weeks ago, we have been experiencing this pain. Now, this feeling, right, that something has started a while ago, whenever, and then it's continuing since then, that feeling comes from this process. And that feeling is this, that hallucination or that imagination. Right, it is just a purely imagination. So I'm not saying that the physical you and so example. Let's say there is someone and they are feeling physical pain since yesterday. So I'm not saying that yesterday you did not have physical pain. What I mean to say is that the physical pain that you had yesterday, that pain was only there in that moment. Really, it had no past. It did not have any future. It did, now because I'm using language, I have to say it did start and finished in that moment itself, but that is not quite it, but let's just put it in that way, that it was only there in that moment, that's it. The physical pain that you felt in the next moment, it had nothing to do with the physical pain which was there in the previous moment, right? So like that, so even though it feels like the physical pain has been continuously there, that is not so, really. So now the thing is, when we understand that there is something, then that something is effect, then we would never feel mental vexation about it. If we properly understand that something is effect, then we will never feel mental vexation about it. It can create physical problems. So if someone hits you hard with something, then now you will feel physical pain, but it will never create mental vexation if you understand that this physical pain is just the effect. Because effect does not exist in the time. But this feeling of when there is no understanding of effect, then it feels as if there has been something, and that something has been there in terms of it's been there in the world, or we put it on the timeline. Really, it's not us putting on the timeline, but this process, this defilement process, it puts the things on the timeline. Really, the things, this world, the events which happens in this world, ladies and gentlemen, they don't happen in the time. This process, it puts the events on the timeline, really. And now the funny thing is this process supposed to happen? Why does this process happen? Because ignorance is there. If the ignorance was not there, then would this process happen? So then, all these feelings that you feel, the feeling of things happening in time and you existing and these likings and dislikings and all defilements and this 11 great fires and all these problems, the very first thing that you should understand about them is that they are not supposed to happen. But that does not mean they are supposed to not happen either. They can happen. If the causes are there, then it will happen. If the causes are not there, then it will not happen. And if it was up to you to do something about it, then you would be able to do something, right? If you had a free will or some sort of power to do something about all these things, then you would be able to do it. But the very fact that you are not able to do it, right? Or even the fact that sometimes you can do something about your problem, other times you cannot do, then that means again the control that you have over your own life is conditional, not unconditional. Because if you have unconditional control over something, then you would always be able to control it. But is there something that you have always been able to control in your life? So just because your whole life you have been able to do it, does that mean that next moment also you will be able to do this? No. Right? So whenever something bothers us, ladies and gentlemen, the good thing to do is we just need to understand it is an effect, really. That is the first thing that we need to understand whenever something bothers us. So someone has asked this question, why does Vipaka takes a long time to come to fruition? So what we need to understand is that it is not so, really. Can someone say that Vipaka always takes a long time to come to fruition? There have been incidents in the history that people, they did do something, and the people on internet, they call it instant karma, right? You might have heard about it, right? That people, they do something and instantly they receive. Now, we don't know whether the karma that they received afterwards is from that karma or not. That we don't know. But it's not right to think that Vipaka always takes a long time to come to fruition. It's like you have the seed of apple, right? But does it mean that what does the time have to do with whether the seed of apple becomes apple tree or not? It has nothing to do with the time, right? It has to do with the cause and effect. If you plant the apple seed on a fertile soil, in the correct soil, and all the other things are also there, the fertilizer and sunlight and water and everything, then it will become a tree, right? It's nothing to do with the time. So we talk about these things in many ways, right? Sometimes we take this example of radio, right? The Vipaka, it's like a radio station emitting the different frequencies, and when the mind is tuned to some particular station, then it channels those energies, right? So sometimes we talk about things in that way. So we can think about it in many different ways, but it's not correct to think that Vipaka takes a long time to come to fruition. It might be, but it might not be also. It's not always supposed to take a long time, right? Sometimes it might take long time, sometimes it might not. So it has to do with cause and effect. It's nothing to do with the time. So someone has asked a question, what is the best method to become a meritorious person day to day, right? So what we have to do, so this is one question, and someone else has asked other question. They have asked, can we please go over the process in which this Rupa Vedna Sanya Sankhara Vinyana happens, and can you please tell how they lead to karma that extends sansara with examples? So I think these are two kind of connected questions. So what is the best method to become meritorious person day to day? So I don't know what is absolutely best way, right? I don't claim to know such a thing, but what I know is that this process of karma, right? Karma is not something which happens in the minds of enlightened people. But Tathagata, fully enlightened people, arhants, they can't create good or bad karma. They can't do merit or demerits. It's only in the mind with the ignorance that merit or demerit can happen. And why merit or demerit only happens in their mind? Because this jati and jati dhamma only happens when there is a ignorance. Without the ignorance, jati and jati dhamma cannot happen. So when you try to get rid of vexation by doing something nice for other people, purely for other people, for their benefit, then this process happens, but when that process happens, the type of energy which is captured in my mind, that energy, whenever it comes to fruition, what kind of result it will create? It will create very pleasant result, right? So that karma, what do we call it? Merit. And the opposite thing, when you try to get rid of your vexation by harming other people, then what do you do? What will happen? Then still the karma will happen, but whenever that karma comes to fruition, what kind of result you will get? You will get, let's say, bad result, the result that you will not like to receive. You would not have liked to receive such a thing, but that is what will come as a result, right? So, even the process of karma that is connected with this defilement process, it's not something separate or different. And the first part of the, so basically how to become meritorious person. So basically you just try to constantly, so as long as there is a ignorance, you are always going to think in terms of people. That there are other people, there is me, there are other people. And as long as you think in terms of people, as long as your worldview is based on people, right? In that worldview, what you need to do is you need to just do the things which will be beneficial for other people, right? So that is the simple way. And then of course, it's not just the physical thing that creates karma, as you all know. The Buddha did tell us, right? It is the chetana or intention which is the karma. So more refined your intention is behind doing something, more powerful that karma will be, right? So that is the very simple answer. And how does the Rupa Vedna Sanya Sankhara Vinyana happen? So now, this is not the process of Rupa Vedna Sanya Sankhara Vinyana. This is connected with that, but Rupa Vedna Sanya Sankhara and Vinyana can happen even for the arhants, right? We call that aggregation process. So the aggregation process, there are causes for aggregation process, right? So traditionally, they say that this Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara and Vinyana. And you know, Rupa can be of six types, the Vedna. So Vedna are classified in many ways in the scriptures. But in one way, if we talk about the Rupa, Vedna, Sanya, Sankhara and Vinyana in context of the six senses, then the Rupa can be of six types, right? From the six senses, Vedna can come from the six sources, right? The Sanya can be six types. The Sankhara can be in that context, can be six types. And Vinyana also can be six types, right? The image Vinyana and the taste Vinyana and all this different consciousness, right? So now, if we talk about the causes of any of this, then this all these five factors, they all have the same causes. And what are those causes? So those causes are avidya, ignorance, avidya, and trushna, and karma, ahara, and nibbati lakkhana. So, right? So, I will repeat. Ignorance or avidya, attachment or trushna, karma, ahara, and nibbati lakkhana. So, this karma, karmic energy, and ahara is basically this all this aggregation of all the causes, really, right? So in order for mind to happen, what if the eye is not working, right? So eye needs to send some sort of data to the mind in order for mind to be created, right? So this physical body is also part of the creation of the mind. So in that way, so basically it is these five factors which creates, so these five factors together, they create rupa. Then these five factors, they create vedna. These five factors, they create sanya and sankhara and vinyana. So you basically need these five factors: avidya, trushna, karma, ahara and nipati lakkhana. So that is the process of this aggregation. And so they have also asked, how does the karma extends the sansara? So in a way, you know, we can't say, so when we talk about the extension of sansara, so you might have heard this story. In Buddha's time, there was a ascetic. So I have a lot of ascetic stories to tell you. So in Buddha's time, there was ascetic and his name was Rohitasya. And now this ascetic, he came to Buddha and he told Buddha that, Buddha, before I came to this life, I was very powerful ascetic and yogi, and I had very highly developed supernatural powers, and I was so powerful that I could fly through the space at a very high speed. Those were the powers that he had as ascetic. Now, then he told Buddha that, Buddha, I was very curious in that life to see where this universe ends. Right? So he wanted to find the end of universe. So then he said that, because I had such a superpowers that I could fly at very high speed, I did try to go on such a quest to find the end of the universe, and I did fly and fly and fly. And for 100 years, except the break to eat the physical food and other things, I did keep flying to try to find the end of universe, right? So at the end of 100 years, I did die, but I could not find the end of universe. And then I was reborn in this life. So now I come and ask you, Lord Buddha, please tell me, is this universe finite or is it infinite, or how big is it, and how do I reach the end of the world? So that is the question that he had to ask to Buddha. Now Buddha did say that by flying in such a way, so this is, you might have heard about this story, this is very famous sentence really. So now I'll just tell you the English translation. So Buddha says that, by flying in such a way, you will not be able to find the end of universe, but in this fathom long body that you have, this 6 foot long body that you have, it is within this body that there is a beginning and end of universe. That is what Buddha says, right? So it sounds very nice philosophically. So it's very famous. You might have heard it, this sentence, right? So now, why did I mention this story? So someone has talked about extending sansara. How does the karma extend the sansara? So see, this is the thing. We feel that, now of course, I assume that whoever has asked this question, how does the karma extend the sansara, they mean to ask how sansara is extended in terms of time, right? Like before, let's say you did not have enough karma, and now when you generate more karma, then now your sansara is extended. That is what they mean by this question. Now the thing is, ladies and gentlemen, it's Buddha did say, Digo balanang sansaro saddhammang avijhanato. That is what Buddha did say in one of the stanzas in Dhammapada. Digo balanang sansaro. Right. So what is digho? Digho means long. Balanang is fool or someone who is crazy, and sansara. So he is saying long is the sansara for fools. Saddhammang avijhanato. So those who don't know saddhamma or the good dhamma, right? The doctrine of Buddha, the people who don't know, they, Buddha says that they have very long samsara. Now, the funny thing is, see, where does that feeling come from? That something exists for a long time. Where does that feeling come from? It comes from this process. So when we talk about the samsara, right? Samsara, even though we feel that samsara has been always there, however long we see in the past, there is something which has always been there. I mean, about when we think about the samsara, we have that feeling, right? That there is something which has always been there. However long we look back or we go in the past, this thing called samsara has always been there. And we feel that it will always be there in the future as well, and it's here right now as well. So, does this feeling sound familiar to you? Something which exists now, which did exist in the past and which will exist in the future also. You know, all these feelings, they are always result of what? This jati and jati dhamma. And those feelings themselves, can you imagine, ladies and gentlemen, this is the trap, really. This is the impossible trap to come out of. The feeling of time, that things have always been there, that feeling of time itself does not happen at any time. Can you imagine? So what I mean by that feeling of time does not happen at any time, what do I mean? So what I mean to say is that any effect, whenever we talk about the effect or manifestation has nothing to do with the time. Nothing whatsoever to do with the time. It is our mind which creates a story out of observation of effect. And that story is something that has been fabricated. That story does not exist in the world out there. That story is not objective, really. This man who did go in front of mirror, is it the image which said that I have always been there, hello? It's not the image which did say that, right? It's the interpretation of the man, right? Because he did go in front of mirror with the wrong expectation and wrong understanding of the reality. That is why, even though there was nothing wrong with the observation itself, right? The image was there. In that moment, it was there. There was nothing wrong with the observation itself. What was wrong? It was the interpretation of what was observed, which was what? Incorrect. Right? And this interpretation, of course, is what? Rupa. Nama. Right? The interpretation, the story that we create, that does not come from the physical matter. It is there, it's fabricated in our mind in that moment according to the causes which are there in that moment. So what really happens is, so basically, you just need to understand this, that what really happens is, in order to get enlightenment is, first you have to clearly understand anicca, dukkha and anatta as clearly as possible, right? You have to keep practicing and practicing and practicing, and you have to develop very precise and accurate understanding of anicca, dukkha and anatta. That is the first thing. And when you do that, when you have proper understanding of anicca, dukkha and anatta, now you can understand one thing. What one thing? That when the mind happens with anicca, dukkha and anatta view, then there are certain type of experiences. When the mind happens with the nitya sukha atta view, that means with the wrong knowledge, right, then there are certain type of experiences. So that is first thing that you need to understand. When you understand that, then now your whole job is just to do this. What? When there is a belief in nitya sukha atta, so now if you were to simplify the defilement process even more, then if you were to just take two steps from the whole process, the first and last step. The first step is what? The belief in nitya sukha atta, that the world is nitya sukha atta. And when there is that belief that world is nitya sukha atta, then if that belief is there, then what is the end product of that belief? The experience, right, or feeling that world is in fact nitya sukha atta. So you know that this really does not happen. Rather, what happens is, you know, when there is a ignorance, then now you know that we have six senses, right? And this six senses, when people, right, arhans and tathagata, right, when they are doing something with their senses, they don't have defiled intention. They are not using their senses in order to get rid of vexation. That is something that we need to understand. So they are their six senses, right? In Pali, there is a word indriya, right? So their six senses, they are just indriya. But the thing is, for normal people, let's say non-arhans, even anagami, right? Everyone on this side of arhans, non-arhans, everyone, right? They are, at least sometime, what they are doing is they are using their senses, six senses. So when it comes to completely normal people who are not even sotapanna, who don't know any dhamma whatsoever, right? I mean, they are pretty much using their six senses all the time in order to, you know, do this like, dislike and ego business, right? The raga, dvesha and moha business. So they are always using their six senses to with the defilements, right? So their six senses are not just indriya, their six senses are what we call ayatana, right? So ayatana or salayatana, those words, they basically mean that the six senses, they are intentionally used in order to get rid of vexation or in order to, you know, indulge in defilements, to satisfy the defilements, dislikings, dislikings and ego, right? So, now why did I mention that is because that's like, you know, this man who did go in front of the mirror. He did go in front of mirror with the wrong idea. So, did he not use his eyes in order to get something that he thinks is already there even when he was not there? Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So, he thinks that something was there even before these six experiences they happened. There was something, and it's just that when I experience it, I just now get to know that it was there. But even before I did observe it, or I did experience the six type of experiences which happened, even before that, those things were there, right? So now, see, this is the funny thing, right? Even about the Dhamma, don't you feel there is a Dhamma? And now you just understand Dhamma which already exists. Don't you feel that feeling? Don't you have that feeling even about the Dhamma? You don't feel Dhamma is a manifestation, right? You don't feel that Dhamma is something you are creating right now in your mind. You feel Dhamma is something which is out there. And now you are just learning. See, it is not so, really. Thinking or Dhamma, Manodhamma, they are also manifestation. It is a fabricated thing, right? So, anyways, the reason why I did talk about the salayatana or the senses which are used as faculties, right? The reason when that happens, then basically what happens is it's not like you are observing something neutrally. You are observing something with the preconceived notions or ideas, right? It's like you are looking at something, but you already have some ideas about what you are going to look at. Like this man, would it think the image is already there? Right? Or imagine, so another someone shared another interesting example with me recently when we were discussing this point. Then they told me that there is another interesting example. So think about your fridge. So every time when you open the fridge, imagine that you are someone who thinks that light is always on in the fridge. Every time you open the fridge, it's not like the light turns off, right? You think that it's just that the light is always on, but when you open the door, then you just see that it's on. That's what you think, right? So this ignorance is a bit like that, right? So you need to understand that it's not so. So anyways, why I mention all this thing is because when six senses, right, when they are under the influence of ignorance, right, then whatever you observe, you are going to create something out of those observations. And what are you going to create out of this observation? This, basically. So, you know that, we talk about very simplified version of dependent origination, but you know in the proper detailed origination, dependent origination process, when Buddha talks about it, Buddha also talks about the six senses, right? the nama rupa pachaya indriya and indriya pachaya fassa and fassa pachaya vedana pachaya and how all these steps, he talks about all these steps, right? So that whole process is the avidya and sankhara and vijnana and nama rupa, right? All those steps. So that indriya step, it comes from the beginning of what? From the ignorance, right? So when you observe something with the bias, then what would be the eventual outcome? Like someone who goes to fridge thinking that even when the door is closed, the light is on. Right? So, then this experience will happen. And now, unless you interpret that observation in correct way, your ignorance will be reinforced, right? So if you go to fridge thinking that even when before you open the door, the light inside is on, then now even when you open the door, now you will see the light is on, but you know that does not mean the light was on before you opened, right? But now if that is what you think and that is all you know, then when you open the fridge and you think the light is on, now how do you interpret that light? You feel that, of course, it's on because it is supposed to be on and it has always been on. It's just that now I have been observing it. So don't you feel about the world in the same way? When the sight, sound, smell, taste, touch and thought, when those six experiences, they happen, then what do you feel? You don't feel this is a manifestation. What do you feel? You feel the light was always on, right? Or the image was always there, right? Even before these experiences happened, they were somewhere, right? The taste was somewhere in the food or whatever you have tasted. The sight, right? So now if you think about right now, you are all here. So now perhaps now, I think all of you have seen Colombo. So now you think that Colombo is there. It's just that right now you're not seeing Colombo, right? So I'm not talking about the physical matter, right? The physical matter, I'm talking about your experience, the chitta, right? What you experience is just the chitta, the colors. Those colors are not there. So it's not like the experience is waiting for you there. No particular experience is waiting for you there, really. When you don't understand that this white board is not really white in absolute sense, if you thought that this white board is really white in absolute way, then now perhaps when you are in Dhamma hall, just imagine that you like this white board, then now you feel vexation when you are in Dhamma hall because you want to see this white board. And why do you want to see this white board? Because you think that this white board is white. Right? So now you understand when you think about cause and effect that nothing is supposed to be in any way whatsoever. Then now how can you wait for something? The time has, so whenever you have even this feeling of waiting that you have, whenever you have this feeling of waiting that you are waiting for something, maybe you might not be able to apply Dhamma, like what exactly is wrong, but you need to understand it's the result of this ignorance process, really. Whenever you are waiting for something, because what you feel is that right now, the thing which exists, you are going to see it in the future or experience it in the future, right? So it's continuing. So this feeling, right, you have to know, at least, even though you might feel it's okay, you have to know that it comes from where? This belief in Nitya Sukha Atta. So anyways, the end point is that when this experience of Nitya Sukha Atta happens, either you interpret it in the correct way or in the wrong way. When you open the door of the fridge, either you think that the light was always on or you understand the light is on because you opened the door. So every time you open the door, just normally, right, don't take this out of context, just in a normal way, what is normal supposed to happen in that situation is when you open the door, if the fridge is working properly, then you will see the light is on. But that does not mean light has always been on. So when this experience of Nitya Sukha Atta happens, we need to understand it's not always supposed to happen. This is not something that is always been there or supposed to happen. So one of the thing is this, when this feeling of self happens, right, when you feel that you are here, now the one thing is, see, this is what Buddha is saying. We normally, what we feel is that I am here because I'm supposed to be here and I exist. That is why I feel I'm here. So, you know, this is that interpretation that light is always on or this image is always there. When you feel that you are here because you are supposed to be here, then now you are interpreting this experience of Nitya Sukha Atta in what? Right way or wrong way? Wrong way, right? So actually what you need to do is, every time when this experience of Nitya Sukha Atta happens, you have to interpret it in the correct way. Whenever you have these thoughts of past, present and future, you need to interpret them in correct way. You don't need to like them. You don't need to dislike them. You don't need to have expectation that it should happen. You don't need to have expectation it should not happen. The only thing that you have to do is what? You have to understand. Right? So, there is this example of shadow, right? When people... it's like, I mean, this ascetics, again, now we come to ascetics, right? This ascetics, there are some ascetics, right? In Buddha's time, these five ascetics, they were not world embarrassing or life affirming, right? They were like sick of sansara and they were like, let us get the heck out of here and we don't like this, right? We want to get out of sansara as soon as possible. There is so much suffering and we don't like all this. God, please give us freedom. So they wanted to go away from the sansara. So that was one way. And then, you know, the large faction of society or huge majority of society, they are like, world is so good, there are so many nice things here, why would we want to get out of here, right? So in a way, about this two point of view, we can think about them as, imagine that there is, when you are walking, there is a shadow, right? So then there are some people who want to run away from the shadow, like the ascetics. They don't want the shadow to be there. And then there are other people who like the shadow, who try to go near the shadow and they want to make the shadow their own. So these are like two extremes. What Buddha did tell us is, he told us that you just need to understand this shadow as a shadow. That's it. What is really happening, he just asked us to understand. Right? This shadow is not supposed to be there and it's not supposed to be not there either. It happens when it happens because of causes. There is nothing to like or dislike there. So today I have made a lot of progress. In previous sermons, there were many questions and I addressed one question from the bunch of questions that I had. Today I have addressed five or six questions, but two questions, they do remain. So just to say something in brief. So someone has asked question, how do we get addicted to good habits? Right? So that is the question. Dhamma advice for getting addicted to certain good habits. So that is the question someone has asked. So we need to understand that mind is kind of the gati, right? The habits basically mean gati. So gati has to be developed. If we don't have a particular type of gati, then that gati we can't just develop in just like that. We have to put effort in order to develop a particular type of gati. Now, in order to get enlightenment, right? If we are not very good human being, then it's very hard or let's say impossible to get enlightenment. So part of our practice is to purify our gati, right? But that is not the end goal. Purifying our gati or just becoming a good human being, that is not the end really. That is just a means to an end really. Because no matter how good you become, you cannot maintain that. I mean, you can maintain, but it's like it's going to be full of effort. Being good human being, it's not like you can just become good human being one day and then from now onwards. In all situations, you will be good human being automatically. You know, something like that does not happen. You have to keep putting effort, right? So it is something that has to be done so that we can get enlightenment, but that is not the end goal. So the basic thing is mind, because mind naturally, if we don't understand anything whatsoever about the Dhamma, then the natural inclination of mind is to do what? Indulge in sensuality, right? And to indulge in the pleasure of ego, right? To become superior, right? So these are the pleasure of the ignorant mind. So So the good habits, basically, it's a means to end, right? And it is something that we have to put effort in order to develop, right? It's not like we are not born with these things. I mean, certain things we can say we have been doing since long time, but then we might have developed such a gati in our previous life. So it's not like we are nice and universe has gifted us this thing or something. It has been developed, really. The mind has to be developed. The mind itself does not want to be in any way, just like everything else in universe, right? So however the mind is developed, either in good or bad way, that is going to be your property for some time in samsara. So it's full of, you have to put effort. Naturally, mind does not like to do good things, right? So that, yes, that is the reason why I did mention those pleasures, the pleasure of sensuality and the pleasure of selfishness. Being selfish is pleasurable to the ignorant mind. So you have to deliberately fight against those feelings, right? That is what we call good human being. So that is something that has to be done intentionally, right? So, and if you want to get addicted, then what you can do is, because you have, whoever has asked this question, they want to get addicted, then what you can do is, whenever you do merits or the good things for other people, you can just be so happy to do those things, and more happy you are, more you want to do it, and when you are very happy, it will just become a positive cycle. So that might be a way to get addicted, right? And last thing, someone has asked question, I understand that what I see is not the outside object, but still I want to see beautiful flowers. Why? So, I think what we need to understand again, just in brief, we did talk about this point of, what are they saying? So they understand some part of Dhamma, but then they still have this desire, let's say, to see beautiful flowers. So what is beautiful flowers? Seeing beautiful flowers means you have this desire to see something, right? So basically you want to use eye sense, right? The sense of eye in order to get something. So you have that wanting or desire. Why? That is what we did discuss in today's sermon, right? Because of ignorance, that desire is there, right? That desire to use the six senses in order to get something from this world. That desire, right, that happens because we don't understand what is really happening. So if you think that the light is always on in the fridge, then every once in a while you like to go and see how the light is, what it looks like. But if you understand that when you open the fridge, only then the light will be on, then now you neither like nor dislike, right, to see, then now you are just free. But if you thought that the light is always on, then once in a while you want to go and see what the light looks like, because you think it's there. So even before you open the door, you are using the eye to fulfill some sort of expectation. So then you are using the indriya as an ayatana, right? The salayatana. So then this question is connected to that. So now the funny thing is, unless you become arhan, you cannot get rid of all the desires fully. Even anagami, right, he also has a ruparaga and aruparaga. So ruparaga means he likes to perhaps see some things and he likes to hear things, right? So even anagami can have such likings to see and hear something. Arhan does not have any desire to even see or hear something. He does not have rupa aruparaga. So aruparaga, of course, is the liking for this different state of minds, but ruparaga is about the using these senses of eyes and ears as ayatana, right? So arhan does not have such a thing. So we need to understand that the reason, so the question is, they have asked, but I still want to see beautiful flowers. Why that is so? The reason why that is so, in case it is happening with you, the only simple explanation is because you are not yet arhan and you have ignorance. So that is not a bad thing. We just need to practice, and eventually the senses will not be abused by the mind, right? Right now, for a normal person, senses are abused. They are not used, they are abused, right? So you want to see something because you don't understand what is the reality. So I think with that, we'll conclude today's sermon. Let's do the merit transfer now. let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in the receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude, let us transfer this merit to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasaka, upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generation of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them will be the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Hansa and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to this monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons or sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the constructions of the monastery, to those of you who have provided the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, ropes, and medicines, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and extend their well wishes. May through the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer the merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles and aunts, cousins and nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form. May by the power of these merits, they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, and may they overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer the merits to devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakkadeva, as well as the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of these merits, they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been our families and friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in sansara, and who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in every way they could. Let us transfer these merits. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the member of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who have lost their lives in the war, be their friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also take a moment to transfer the merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural disasters such as the tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinitely long journey of sansara. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits to them. May through the power of this merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and they be born in the blissful plains. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired today, may we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arhants on this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success become arhant Hanse or arhant Mahani Hanse in this very life and in the era of Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.